Welcome to Apostrophe Cast. This episode, we are very pleased to bring you Sheila Hedy. Both intense and delightful, Hedy's work lures us in with brilliant reimaginings of powerful archetypes, then stings us with endings both surprising and inevitable. The result is a literature of the twilight world between reality and fantasy that instructs as it amazes. In Autobiography of a Clown, Miss Hedy performs a kind of literary origami to fold and twist the story of a clown into a powerful extended meditation on a beautiful world we have lost and the painful truths that remain the same. Please enjoy Autobiography of a Clown.
This is Sheila Hedy reading a story called Autobiography of a Clown. My mother often tells me that the first thing I saw when I opened my eyes was Armand, the French clown, whitening his face in the sun. I looked out the window with my new little eyes, and there was Armand, whitening his face for the afternoon performance. I was born in a circus wagon. My mother had been a trapeze artist when she was young, but then she grew stout and invested in a small circus. That is when I was born. Few people know their destinies, but for me it was always clear that I was to become a clown, and there was never a thought in my father's mind or my mother's mind that I would do anything else. The French clown Armand was my nurse when my mother, so busy with the demands of running a small circus, could not be. In those days I would sleep under the hoofs of the horses and toddle around the tent, and if I cried at night my mother would wrap me in a blanket and take me out to see the lion and tell me that if I did not sleep, the old man would come out and roar. Though I cried at night, I never cried during a show. Another baby might have been upset when all the adults were occupied, for there is nobody left to look after a child when a show is being performed. But I was charmed by the circus music, and lay happily in my bed. When I grew a little older, I began to be a nuisance for my family, and my mother and father began sending me to live with relatives during the performing season. Then they'd return to fetch me for the winter. I remember little of the days I spent with my relatives in the city, except for the words of my aunt, which used to please me so, that one day I would grow up to be a performer in the circus. When I was 5, I made my first appearance on the stage. In circus life, as soon as a child can walk on his hands, he is put to work, and so it was with me. When I was 4, my father took me on a journey to London, and there we stayed in a hotel frequented by circus and theatrical types. The hotel bar was a seedy one, but though the men who lived with the circus were rough and rude, they were the hardest working men I would ever meet. As we passed through the saloon, some people called out to my father, and as many clapped me on the back. Though I had been near such types all my life, I became suddenly shy with the knowledge that something important was happening to me, and I hid behind my father's legs. Indeed, that day was to be the most important of my young life, for since I could now walk and understand, I had to be put to work, and my father and mother agreed to apprentice me to a well-known clowning family until I grew old enough to decide the path of my life for myself. I might now explain that the word family does not refer to people related by blood, but to performing troops who come together to ply their trade. We waited a long time in that bar. When at last we were approached by a red-haired man whom my father addressed as Mr. Ravelli, I felt a shiver pass through me when I saw him, and it is no wonder he had such effect on me, because he was to become a very important figure in my life. They spoke for a while, then, making me vow my obedience to this new man, my father embraced me tenderly and left. Just like that I'd become traded, and returning with Mr. Ravelli to his wagon, I at once grew lonesome. Work with the Ravellis was difficult, and they started my training immediately. They were eager for me to begin performing because a child is naturally flexible and everyone loves to watch a child. A rope would be tied to my waist and a performer would stand at each side of me, holding the length of the rope in their hands, and together they would twist it so I could get used to being upside down. In this way they taught me to turn flips in the air, and because a child learns so easily and well, it was not long before I could do flips forwards or backwards without the rope tied to my waist. It is never too early in the circus for a child to join an act. As soon as he can walk and understand, his life of work has begun. So it was with me. A week before I turned 6, I made my first appearance on the stage. Before the show, one of the men made me up in his style of costume, turning me into a smaller version of himself. He appeared on stage first, and I was sent out in the middle of the act, once he had lost his love. As soon as I tumbled into the lights, the music of the audience's flattering applause roused me, and I walked in the way I had been taught, with my legs far apart. And again the wonderful warm laughter came when I took the flower from the boy as the pretty girl was kissing him. When I left the stage, I could hear them shouting for my return, and I was about to step out from my bow, as I had seen the others do, when Mr. Ravelli pulled me back from the lip of the stage by the frill about my neck, and I was forced to sit and wait alone by the back of the stage atop a sack of flour. The tears began burning in my eyes. I thought my first turn on the stage would be my last, and that I would be sent from the Ravellis an orphan. Later, when the audience left the tent, and they always left it reluctantly, I could hear Mr. Ravelli out in front saying that I would play again. The circus shows traveled in wagons, and no matter if it was cold and raining or dry and hot, there was no better feeling I ever had than waking in the middle of the night, the whole family asleep around me, and only the sound of the driver with his whip on the horse and his quiet words, "A little further now," goading it on. It was a hard life, but traveling those nights from one town to the next, waking up in the deepest country, out in the fresh country air, under the sky with its stars stretched out above me, were the gentlest nights I ever spent. We would stop at the edge of a little town before dawn, and the troop would come slowly to life. I would sit and apply my face, and dress in my loose white clothes, and my white peaked hat, in the manner of the pantomime. I never went on stage without my white peaked hat. When everyone was ready and daylight was up, we would enter the village, the most beautiful acrobatist from the circus always in the lead atop the white horse, waving from on high and raising the envy and admiration of every woman in the city. Such towns hardly ever had a resident theater, so the arrival of the circus was anticipated all year long. When we would parade in, there was not one villager who did not step out of their shop as if they were working, or out of their home as if they were sleeping, and line up in the streets to watch us pass by. Often the parade had to be made on an empty stomach, and it was not until the people of the town had as much free performance as they could get out of us that we were able to retreat, change out of our clothes, and hurry to the nearest tavern, where we would eat heartily and well. Though many of the performers grumbled about the parade into town, in fact it was a moment of great glory. The children would follow us from the outskirts at dawn and would have followed us straight into our rooms if we had let them. When my apprenticeship was over, I left the Ravellis. Though I was grateful to them for having given me a living since I was 5 years old, I could not forget the years I had suffered, when I had been made to go without food for some failing, and at 16 there were still too many scars on my back. So although they wanted me to stay, I struck out with two other boys who had also left their circus families. We thought of taking up other trades, and for some time I lifted cargo at a shipping dock. But a boy who has practiced his work from the moment he can walk cannot easily give it up. It is in his heart, and so it was with me. It wasn't 10 months before I joined another circus and began my clowning career in earnest, now a grown man, no longer at the service of anyone but myself and the family I had freely chosen. Never again did I doubt that I was truly a clown or wish for another life. It seems the right time to say a word or two about our women, for the idea that they are all immoral is far from the truth. Nearly all the women I have met in the circus are honest wives, loving mothers, and as hard-working as any women anywhere. Many a trapeze artist who works the ropes will return at the end of the season to a husband and her children, and I have known strong men who can lift the weight of 20 men, put aside half their earnings, and send it to a needy mother, and I have witnessed men who are quick to brawl, weeping at a letter they have received from a daughter back home. I had but one great love in my life, but one is enough, and this woman is my wife, as she has been for the past 50 years. If it wasn't for her, I would still be a wanderer on the face of this earth. To give an idea of how important the circus was to people, I will tell the story of one little fellow, skinny and smudged with dirt, who I saw crying outside a tent in a small village we were performing in, before I was to make my entrance. He was standing near the canvas, and I saw his bitter tears, so I asked him, "Why do you cry like a baby?" He told me that he did not have enough money to see the circus. Well, I took pity on the little rascal, and not for the first time, lifted the canvas for the child to creep under it so he could watch the show. 20 years later, I returned to the same town, this time traveling with a different circus. A fine-looking young man approached and asked if I knew of a Jules the Clown, if he might be with this circus. "I am Jules," I told him. His face grew flushed, and he took my hand and said, "When I was a tiny boy of 3, you took pity on me and let me under the flap of the tent to see the circus. My family did not have the money to afford this luxury." This just shows how beloved the circus was in my day. I was happy to see what a fine young man he had turned out to be. I feel pity for the circus performer of today who has to travel by train. It was at the end of my life as a clown that the circus stopped traveling by wagon. With trains running all across the country and stopping at nearly every small town, train travel was much faster, and the wagons also had a habit of breaking down and were a great attraction for thieves. So when one circus began to travel by rail, it wasn't long before all the shows took it up, and gone were those beautiful nights under the stars on dusty roads, moving slowly from town to town out in the fresh country air. The change made circus life less precious to me, and it was easier to leave the trade when my body had grown too old. One of the most difficult shows I ever had to perform was when I was still a young man, not 5 years into my profession. Anastasia, who worked the trapeze, was the sweetest and smallest woman I had ever known, and she was engaged to another performer in the trapeze named Danto. The show was less than halfway done, and we clowns had not yet performed our routine. The moment in the act came when Anastasia was to let go of the bar she had been holding onto with her legs, and grasp hands with Danto, who was flying towards her. This was an ordinary trick that could be performed without thought, but on that afternoon her foot caught on the bar and she missed his grasp and fell straight to the ground. In those days we did not work with nets. She landed on her head and was dead. Everyone saw what had happened, but there is nothing more fatal to a circus than for one moment to let the gaiety stop. So the circus master called out to the audience, "The lady begs you to excuse her for the rest of the night." And with heavy hearts, we clowns tumbled out and began our act, each of us playing the fool to distract the audience from the disaster as her limp body was carried off behind the scene of our mischief-making. The circus played another hour before we were able to pull our wigs off and gather and mourn and comfort Danto, whose face was as white as our own. It is always this way when tragedy visits a circus in the middle of a show.
Thank you for listening. Please join us on September 10th for our next reading.